Someone somewhere told us not to build code for our solution until we had a customer interview that made someone cry, because cry in a good way, because they were so excited that their problem was finally getting a solution. And we did. At first, when I heard it, I was like, of course no one is going to cry, because it's not the type of problem that makes people cry. But we eventually did get someone who cried in a demo, and that's when we knew, okay, we're ready to build the code.
Welcome to the SaaS Revolution Show, a podcast by SaaSDoc. Here we interview SaaS founders from around the world who've been there and done that, as they share the ins and outs of how they built their businesses, their operations, their path to securing investment, and more. Our mission with the podcast is to help you, the founder, learn how to scale your SaaS, maintain your well-being, and navigate the complexities of this ever-changing industry. I'm your host, Alex Dima, and together we'll explore the good, the bad, and the ugly in the journey to SaaS success. Welcome back to the SaaS Revolution Show. I'm your host, Alex Dima, CEO and founder of SaaSDoc. Delighted to be joined today by Martha Bittar, who is the CEO and co-founder of Flowdesk. Welcome, Martha.
Hi, so great to be here.
Good to have you on the podcast. Obviously, soon you'll be in Austin for SaaSDoc USA. But you're not in Austin at the moment. Whereabouts are you?
I'm in Lisbon, Portugal.
Lisbon, Portugal. And I understand, I think when we spoke recently, you moved there not too long ago. Where were you before, and why have you moved to Lisbon?
Yeah, so I grew up in Mexico, actually. And then I moved to the US, back to the US for college. Eventually moved to San Francisco for a sales job at Oracle. In San Francisco, I met my co-founder. We started Flowdesk, and then traveled to Lisbon for fun just in the summer of 2021 during the COVID digital nomad phase. And I just never left. I loved it here.
Very cool. Yeah, I do. It's one of my favorite European cities for sure. I have been there once with my young family, and I kind of made them walk everywhere and all the hills. They didn't really like that too much, but I don't know if you've got a hack for that. I know you've got a young kid, and what do you do around the hills, or is it just kind of, you know, walk and get fitter?
Yeah, walk and get fitter, and get a pram that can take the little cobblestone sidewalks, which are gorgeous to look at, but really difficult to to walk on.
They are. Maybe I don't do electric prams exist at the moment that can take a bit of a strain off. If not. We could invent them.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe someone needs to make that up and make a business out of it.
Exactly. Good stuff. Well, Martha, obviously, thank you for sharing as to how you've ended up in Lisbon. I guess some of who you are, and given that you've grown up in Mexico City, will come out, you know, for the next question a little bit. But we'd love to know a little bit more about yourself. So who is Martha Bittar?
Yeah, first. So I actually grew up in the north of Mexico. And I am the oldest of four siblings who we're all very tight. They're my life, other than my 1 year old and my husband, of course, and my parents. I love family, if you can't tell. And I've always been very entrepreneurial. I would say I've always had a passion for side hustles and sales and problem solving. When I was, I would say maybe 7 years old, I remember hearing my parents argue once, and they were arguing about money. So I convinced my friend Barbara to go and sell rabbits, because my dad loved animals and he had a lot of pets, and you know how rabbits reproduce. So we had a lot of rabbits. So we went and grabbed the rabbits and put them in a basket and walked around the neighborhood and just knocked door to door, selling them to our neighbors. And we didn't tell our parents, so they were freaked out and looking for us everywhere. We got into a lot of trouble, but yeah, learned some good lessons. And yeah, then I moved to Lisbon. I moved to the US, went to college there, then took a sales job at Oracle, moved to a tech startup. That's where I met my co-founder, Rebecca. We bonded over our love for design and small businesses, and very quickly started experimenting with the idea of Flowdesk. And we can get more into the detail of how the idea came up. And then I moved to Lisbon during COVID, because I was just working by myself and trying not to go insane. And shortly after moving here, I met my now husband. We have a 1-year-old daughter, and we're growing the business. It's really fun.
Awesome. Growing the business and growing the family. Very cool.
Exactly.
And I won't ask which one's harder, but I'm doing both as well. So you met your co-founder at a tech startup, had that shared love of design and, you know, for the SMB side. So tell us a little bit more then about that founding story of Flowdesk.
Absolutely. I was working in business development at a startup that was helping creative entrepreneurs get paid. And she had her own template shop. And we met, we were talking about potentially doing a partnership. We bonded, we became friends very quickly. And I actually tried to poach her for the startup that I was working for. And it didn't work because nobody showed up to the interview. So instead, she poached me to build Flowdesk together. And the way it started was that we both really, truly have a passion for creative entrepreneurs and the startup world. And the small business world, especially. She grew up in Silicon Valley, learning how businesses work, learning how to create value for a lot of people. And as you know, I grew up in Mexico. So I grew up going to a corner shop that was mom and pop owned, right? I grew up going to tacos de la esquina and local coffee shops, and nothing was franchised. Nothing was like Walmart and McDonald's and Starbucks and everything that you see now. Everything was craft and unique. So we love the idea of this world, but we also see that that's not really where we're trending towards. And if we don't do something right now to really help level the playing field for small business owners, then we'll just continue on that track, right? So we're very passionate about doing that, about making it easier for small businesses to compete with the large behemoths, right, that they're competing against right now. So we discovered this gap, I would say, in two ways. First, she had her own template shop, right? And among the templates that she was designing, and she truly is the best designer in the world, so these designs are gorgeous, right? And she was already designing email templates. But then her number one support request was not being able to implement these gorgeous designs in any of the tools that were already out there because they would just break. They wouldn't render the design properly because the tools weren't easy to use or they were heavily dependent on code. So they were just not built for beautiful design. And at the same time, I was doing biz dev in the creative entrepreneur space, meeting a lot of really smart, creative people who were already business owners and knew how to market. They knew how to grow their business, but they could not make email marketing work because their identity is so tied to their business, and the email has to look the part. It has to look on brand, right? It's like in the past, if you walked into a shop and the shop didn't look good, you probably wouldn't want to walk into that shop, right? And now email is just how you sell online. And if it doesn't look good, then you just don't send it. So they would spend all this time, they would get frustrated. So I would say, hey, come here, like, let's have coffee. I'll code it for you, or I'll build it into your MailChimp account. And then next week, when you want to send your weekly update, just go into the code, control F to find the title and replace it. But even that was really, really complicated. And again, these were really smart people. So then I started sending them to Rebecca. And Rebecca at some point was like, Martha, just stop, because I can't solve this problem. This is an impossible problem. The tools are just not built to support beautiful designs. So that's where we started realizing, okay, so A, there's a huge gap, right? It's what we'd say hiding in plain sight, because everybody is struggling with these. And there are so many competitors that are building gorgeous tools, but nobody's really tackling the problem, especially for small business owners. And at the same time, we knew we were so passionate about building a world of craft and a world where small businesses could thrive. And we realized email is truly what levels the playing field, because if you look at social media, you pay to play, right? Like, you're competing against algorithm and against all these other companies that are paying to get visibility. In the inbox, it's beautiful. There are no ads, right? So you grow your list, you own your list. If you decide to leave one platform and go to another, you still carry your list with you. It's so empowering. It really works. It's a tool that works for the small business owner. And you won't get displaced from the inbox because somebody else had more money and paid for more eyeballs, right? It's so pure, and we love that. And there's not a single company that owns email, right? So we're just passionate about the possibilities of the channel. And I know that every single year somebody says, oh, email is dead and nobody's going to use it anymore. But in fact, we're realizing the opposite. Gen Z is even more bullish on email It's the number one preferred channel of communication that they want to use with brands that they follow and they love and that they purchase from. So yeah, that's pretty much it.
Awesome. Awesome. And what data can you share about the company?
Mm-hmm. So we started building late 2018, launched in August of 2019, got to 1 million ARR that December, 4 months later. We're at 25 million ARR right now, fully bootstrapped to date. We haven't taken a single dollar of funding, and we have 49 employees.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, obviously, getting to 1 million in 4 months, you clearly had something there. You had that customer demand, and that's fantastic. And we can maybe dig into that a little bit. And also, obviously, big congrats. Bootstrapping a business is difficult. Getting it to 25 million, as you have done, is some achievement. I'm sure, you must have had some VCs knocking at the door, or like, have you ever considered with your co-founder about, being venture backed and taking it to the next level, if even that is the right thing, right? But tell me a little bit about your thoughts about being bootstrapped versus like taking venture money.
Yeah, absolutely. So at the beginning, we were really against it because we were building this in Silicon Valley, right? So we did meet with some VCs and we just came to the conclusion that they didn't get it. They truly, they couldn't understand the gap in the market. And we would talk about beautiful designs. And I understand that beautiful designs is a very vague, maybe subjective term. But if you don't get design, you either do or you don't, right? It's like a language. You either speak it or you don't. And that was really disheartening to us. Separately, we were also very against it because we knew that we were building for people who weren't going to have funding to start their businesses. So we just wanted to stay as true as possible to this path. As we started growing the company, we met, you're right, they came inbounded into the inbox, and these are some names that we read their newsletters and we really respect their thought leadership. So it wouldn't make sense for us to not meet them. So we met with them. We still do very regularly, and they've been able to provide really valuable advice. And we always come to the same conclusion, right? We're cash flow positive. We were from pretty much day one, and we have money in the bank. So we don't need the fundraising to reach our goals, to hire, to scale. We're already scaling. We're growing at the same rate as our portfolio companies without the funding, right? So we're keeping really close relationships. And if it ever makes sense in the future, then of course we'll look into it. But it truly doesn't at the moment.
Makes sense. And so let's talk about getting to 1 million in 4 months, right? I think quite not often heard of in terms of that level of achievement, and certainly for a bootstrap business, right? So can you just tell us a little bit about how you acquired your first customers and maybe a few lessons and how you got to 1 million in 4 months?
Sure. Okay, so how we acquired our first customers, it was, I would say, hustle has been a theme throughout the entire bootstrap journey. Probably not surprising, but we just hustled everywhere. We called outreach wherever we were, right? So at the beginning, starting from everyone that we knew, we'd just say, hey, we're building something and it may or may not be relevant to what you're doing, but if it is, can you please take a look at it and provide some feedback? I remember going online on Facebook forums and sharing some screenshots of the pretty designs and the later on vision, and asking if anyone was struggling with email marketing, if they give us 15 minutes of their time to do a mock-up or an interview. Then every time we'd get someone to accept to do an interview or a mock-up walkthrough, before the end of the call, we'd ask them for 3 referrals, and sometimes they'd give them, sometimes they didn't. But if you think about it, we were doing 12 customer. So that's another thing. We were doing a lot of customer conversations. So my goal, this the sales background coming in a little bit, but my goal was to have 12 customer interviews every single day. Not everyone would show up, but I would schedule them. And however I would get them, that was my problem, right? But that was my goal. So if that means I have to go and knock on neighbors' doors and say, hey, do you have a business? Or can you, do you know anyone that could find this relevant? Or cold call people, and or go on forums, right? Or cold email random people. Whatever it took, I would need to fill these slots. And then if you think about it, maybe 10 people would show up, maybe 9 people would show up. And then if we're asking for 3 referrals of each, that just grows, right? That becomes a little bit of an exponential, non-scalable growth pool of leads. So we did that.
Yeah, I mean the customer interviews. It's super interesting, and obviously how you did it. Just like any means that you could find the 12 people to kind of get them there. I think just sharing actually. So we have this I'd say sort of product called the SaaS Founder Membership, which is a bit like an EO or a YPO for SaaS, right? And to get B2B SaaS founders together, to build their masterminds and to build a network and to get them the right level and education to help them grow faster. And we are looking at expanding. Initially, it was for founders that are, let's say really kind of between 1 million to 10 million ARR, and now expanding from 10 to 20. And then I'm looking at doing, customer interviews with those that are over 10 million in revenue. But then to get founders of over 10 million in revenue, to get on the phone and, give them that compelling reason, is not always easy, right? And there's no doors I can knock on because obviously we're in that that virtual world. But I think I guess on that, from your learnings and what you did around customer interviews, like, did you find a pattern or something really kind of compelling to get people to, give you their time so that they, could give you their time and give you their feedback? Was there a trick to it?
Oh, I don't think there is a trick. I think you get a lot of no's, and that's just the nature of sales. So you just increase your volume. You got to find the yeses. You try to focus on the problem, right? So ask if they have any pains. If they have any pains, that they're more likely to give you their time, because then there's a chance that you might build something that can help resolve them.
We mentioned in the intro that obviously you're speaking at SaaS USA, which we're super excited about. And you will be discussing, how you bootstrap to 25 million in ARR. Not everybody that's listening to the podcast is unfortunately going to be in Austin for whatever the reasons. We understand that not everybody can make it, right? There will obviously be some people that will be there. But we are really largely going to cover that topic now. And really do talk about maybe the top five things that you did to get there. And there will be some differences, 100%, when you talk about it at SaaS Austin. But for the podcast listeners, let's talk about the top five things you did to get to 25 million ARR. So where do you want to start? I mean, I think you already mentioned the hustling and the hustling nature. So is this one of the top five things?
Definitely, 100%. I think the hustle goes beyond just finding your cold outreach to find initial customers, maybe partners, but also to find credits. So we were bootstrapping, right? We don't have money and we have infrastructure costs from the very beginning. So one of the first things we did was cold email Amazon, Google, database companies, right? Just to ask for startup credits. And a lot of them already have a program. We applied to every single thing. We got a lot of no's, but we also got a lot of yeses. So we got to 1 million ARR that December, and from the moment we launched to past 1 million, we did not have a single dollar of infrastructure spend. And that was hugely helpful. So hustle for credits, that was number one. Number two top thing we did to get to 25 million ARR is, I would say, obsessing about customers. So the customer interviews were key because we're building for them, right? So we're not building ego solutions. We're not putting a mock-up in front of them and then hoping that they get it. We're asking them, where would you go, for example, to change the color, right, of the background of this email? And then we'd observe where they would move their mouse to, and that's where we'd put the button, right? So we really were building something intuitive because we were looking at what were they intuitively doing and then following very quickly. And to date, right, that's how we build. A lot of times people aren't able to articulate exactly what they want, or they have a lot of bias with existing solutions. So getting to the real problem that we're trying to solve and then figuring out what's the best way to solve it has been key. Number three, we were remote from day one, and we committed to hiring the best people in the world for the role, no matter where they were. And that was a huge, huge competitive advantage. And to this day, it is, because it allowed us to build our engineering team in Vietnam, where our super visionary CTO is. And these team, I mean, they're not just employees of the company, they're owners of the company. And they're brilliant. They have already created several different patents for Flowdesk. And it allowed us to stay lean, right, for longer as well, and to grow our team and grow our engineering resources. Number four, this is probably my favorite and also the most impactful, is viral loops. So you've probably heard of the Hotmail model. We didn't make it up. If you think about Hotmail, the way that they grew so quickly, and they have a footer at the bottom of emails that says made with made in Hotmail. So we have the same. It's made with love and Flowdesk. And the nature of our product is it has that viral loop, right? So it allowed us to focus on making each new user hyper successful and getting them to send their first email faster. Because what happens is when they send their first email, everyone in their email list gets the gorgeous end result of using Flowdesk, which is this beautiful design. And they see the footer and they know that it's built with Flowdesk. And if they have that need, they click on that footer, they go, they start their trial, and then they get put into this optimized flow to send their first email where they get even more eyeballs. So this is key. If we ever start a new company, we definitely will only look at ideas that have a viral loop, because it allows you to really focus on your customers while having this organic growth loop that works by itself, right? As long as you focus on the right things. And then number four, our affiliate program. So very early on, we realized that people were very happy with the solution and they were telling their friends. So a very organic behavior was they come in, they send their first email, then they use their phone to record their experience and share it in Instagram stories. So we wanted to reward this behavior and encourage this behavior. So we created an affiliate program. And one of the things that we did was not make it an exclusive affiliate program where people have to apply, but we just gave everyone an affiliate link. So anyone that wants to share it already has all the tools. They just log into their account. They see a little money icon and share their link. So we actually had an affiliate program built before we even had a website, because we just knew that this behavior was happening all the time. So we wanted to make sure that we had the tools to encourage it. So that has been massive as well for growth. I'd say that's our top five. Let me know if we can dive deep into any one of them.
I think the last two are, I mean, look, it's all super interesting, and obviously all coming together is, you know, enabled you to build this 25 million ARR bootstrap business in no time at all. I think the viral loops thing and then the affiliate program, I would love to maybe dive a little bit onto that. Again, like, I mean, I've seen the one that sort of springs to mind, and I'm sure, and you obviously used the Hotmail example, Typeform, have that sort of like powered by Typeform, which kind of really, you know, helped them. But I guess my question is, and it's probably not every SaaS company, has that viral loop capability, right? And you can't just put powered by or made with love by, you know, on the bottom of your SaaS, website or whatever it is, right? To then try to get that viral loop. So how do you identify if your product, can enable viral loops, right? Because you mentioned that your next product, if you ever did build a next product, which I'm sure there's plenty of time to do, you would make sure that it has that capability to be viral. So yeah, long-winded question there, but ultimately, like, how do you know if it, because it's not for everyone, right?
So first is changing your thinking from funnels to loops, right? Because almost everything has a loop. Even if it's not embedded in the product, if you think about it, paid marketing, for example, is a loop. You get a new user, that new user pays you, you get more money to spend in paid, and then that advertisement gets new users, which is the loop itself, right? So first of all, start thinking of loops. And then in terms of how to put it in the product, oh my gosh, like, there are so many opportunities, right? If you can't mimic that, so first of all, do explore if you can put the footer into your product, right? That Hotmail model is something that has helped. Yes, Typeform, also Calendly, Zoom, right? There are a lot of companies that are embodying this model, and you can just explore, take a look, and maybe even like experiment with things that are already working for others. If you can't do that, then explore other avenues where your product organically gets shared or seen by other people, or could be shared or seen by other people. So for example, Teams, right? And Slack is a great example of this. If your product can be used for collaboration, then explore the organic moments in the product where your users can bring in their teams. So for example, in Slack, when you get onboarded, right, very early in the onboarding process, you get asked to import your team or to send invites to others in your team. Superhuman, the email management tool, does this as well, very, very well. So that's the second option. Third option is, I would say affiliate programs are also a viral loop. So for example, Superhuman is a great example of these. If you get to inbox zero, you get this really gorgeous screen with a different background each time, very creative, and you can share that screen, right? It's a boastful moment, but it also, it's a really ideal opportunity for others to see your work. If you're enabling people to do creative work, then having a way to share these, maybe share these to your social media profiles, is another really great idea. I think, or for example, going back to the very beginning, because I really do think that footers in the, or our action items in the product are seriously the most powerful viral loops. Another idea is if you don't feel like you can get away with putting a footer at the beginning of the experience, then also explore if you can do it at the end of the experience. So for example, if you have a booking platform and somebody successfully goes through the booking experience at the end, once they're done, you can have an invite to create your own experience, right? So there are a lot of ways, I'd say, taking the time to understand what are the organic moments where new eyeballs could be brought in is probably step one.
Thanks for sharing that. And just on then on the affiliate program side of things. So again, I'm sure that there are folks listening to this podcast that are considering rolling out affiliate programs, or maybe they're trying and succeeding or failing. Maybe what are some of your lessons to succeed in building out an affiliate program for your SaaS product?
Oh, okay. So number one is to never underestimate the small voices. So a lot of affiliate programs that I see are built based on exclusivity. I understand because you want to vet some of your users. But if you have, first of all, we have a free trial for 30 days, but after that, you have to choose a paid platform. If you have the right measures to make sure that your platform's secure and bring in quality users, open it to everyone. Because, for example, 76% of our affiliate wins are brought in from a long tail of small voices, people who bring in maybe one or two referrals, and that just adds up really. So that's number one, open it to everyone. Number two, a lot of people focus on what can I bring to the affiliate? What can I give the affiliate so that they're incentivized to share? And they really forget that a lot of times the affiliate is more focused on what is the value that they can bring to their own audience. So don't forget to give them something of value that they can give to their audience. For example, we give our affiliate $19, but we give them a unique code where they can offer 50% off the first year of Flowdesk to their audience. So they want to bring that value, and their audience can't get that directly through us. So that's number two. Number three is, this is probably the last one, but super, super important, is when you invite someone to share, make sure that that you experiment with the moment where you introduce that call to action, but you also build it into where they organically get past their aha moment. So what is the aha moment? Is a moment where they realize that your solution is something that will work for them, right? Whether it's something that gets them excited, or they realize that it's something easy to use. For us, it's the moment they choose their first template, because they see the designs, they realize, okay, this is something that I can identify with, my brand can identify with, I'm going to use it. So after they create their first email, we drop them into a flow where the call to action of share flow disk is displayed. So experiment with the timing of that, but also observe the way that customers are intuitively using your tool and when they're already organically deciding to share.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Now, conscious of time, so we'll move into the quickish fire round. So I'd love to know what one thing has moved the needle the most for you in your career.
Yes. Building genuine relationships would be the number one. If you think of Flowdesk, and we go back to that hustle of talking to people that we know and asking for help, I would say a huge part of the success of Flowdesk has been built based on these personal connections with customers, with partners, co-founders. So that's been number one.
Awesome. What's the best advice you've ever received?
I can't remember where I heard these, but someone somewhere told us not to build code for our solution until we had a customer interview that made someone cry, because cry in a good way, because they were so excited that their problem was finally getting a solution. And we did. At first, when I heard it, I was like, of course, no one is going to cry because this is not the type of problem that makes people cry. But we eventually did get someone who cried in a demo, and that's when we knew, okay, we're ready to build the code.
Very cool. First time I've heard that, but very, very cool. What about, what's the biggest failure you've made in lesson learned?
Oh, okay. Our first year, our first Black Friday, 3 months after launching, we didn't properly scale our platform, and we crashed, and Flutus was down for a couple of hours. And this was horrible because our customers were depending on us to run time-sensitive campaigns. And it... We went live, we apologized to our customers, and we made sure that that would never happen again. So it helped us. It was horrible. I would hope it didn't happen, but since it already happened, we can only get better from here. So it helped us get super, super strong in our planning for high season and scaling.
What about the hardest thing about being a CEO?
The weight of the responsibility, I would say, knowing how your decisions can affect your team and your customers, especially when you're targeting small businesses. That's a lot of times their livelihood. So the highs are highs, but the lows are lows.
Have you a favorite book on business? And if so, what it is? What is it?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Blink by Malcolm Gladwell. So it tells you about how our unconscious mind is equipped to make very, very accurate snap judgments, and sometimes even more accurate than critical analysis. So essentially your body is an analysis tool as well. So while getting the data, the hard data is super important, it's also important to listen to your body and understand that there's a lot of data behind your gut instinct, right? So when your gut's yelling, listen to me, there's something there.
Yep, I haven't read that one. I'll add that to the list. And so finally, as we have mentioned a few times, you will be speaking at SaaS.USA, which is in Austin, May the 13th to the 15th. Have you been to Austin before?
Yes, I used to live there.
Oh, you used to live there. Sorry, I may have missed that. And thought your thoughts on Austin and like as a city, what should people expect and from. Not just the conference side of things, but what's exciting about Austin? What do you love the most about that?
It's a super weird city. It's probably my favorite city in the US. The food is amazing. Barbecue, tacos, breakfast tacos. The people are very, very friendly, very open. There's live music everywhere. The weather is fantastic. Just everything. There's nothing that I don't like about Austin.
And we've obviously mentioned that you'll be speaking about and more in depth about, how you bootstrap to 25 million ARR. Aside from your own talk, which I'm excited about, why should people come to SaaS.USA? What is it that perhaps you're looking forward to?
So first of all, the connections, right? Like you really are curating amazing people. Connections were amazing for us. They were huge. They still are. Two, the knowledge. So I'm pretty proud of my session and the learnings that we're going to be sharing. But I remember when we started Flutus, we went to SaaS Talk, and it was some of these conversations and some of these talks that gave us the frameworks that we're still using today to grow our company. That's top.
Amazing. And actually, I should have known, but I didn't know that you attended SaaS Talk in the early days. So good to hear that, and that it's the knowledge is being put to use of what you've learned. I'm really looking forward to meeting you in person in Austin and watching your talk and the speaker dinners and all the connections and everything that's going to be happening. So it's going to be super fun and getting back to Austin. In the meantime, if people that have been listening to the podcast want to reach out to you, where can they find you online? Where can they find Flowdesk?
Of course, we're at flowdesk.com, so FLODESK.com. On Twitter, we're at Flowdesk Inc. And on Instagram, we're at Flowdesk.
Very cool. Good stuff. Martha, looking forward to May, SaaS.USA. Thank you so much for sharing in the meantime with the SaaS.USA community. Really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Martha Bitter, CEO of Flowdesk.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the SaaS Revolution Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you learned something from it, check out saasdoc.com/events to find all the upcoming SaaSdoc conferences around the world.
Want exclusive SaaS content and actionable insights to grow your SaaS? Join our community of over 36,000 SaaS founders at saasdoc.com.